Bobrovsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And we're ready to just dive right into it. Things are happening. I'll tell you what that is. For one, we found out that, first we had little Marco. And now we have Fat Donald. But I'll talk about that later. I'll tell you exactly why the whole thing's going to backfire. It's absurd. But you know, some of you have listened to the program for a while, and others of you may just be tuning in now or this week for the first time. And I just feel from time to time, I want to just take a little minute, because when I talk about issues, when I talk about these things that are going on, and I get really into the race and what's going on with politics and all that, it's important for me to explain to you that it's not a question purely of a horse race. Okay, it's fun because of course there's lots to talk about and hilarious asides left and right. But for me, this is always a question of principle. And I've told you this before, I'm going to just repeat it briefly if you would humor me. So everyone has a story of where their opinions have come from. Everyone has a certain genesis to their thought. And some people, you know, it's true, some people have no genesis for their thought, and I can't say anything to that. But for me, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, okay? The 1980s, the era of Reagan. But it really wasn't, for me, it wasn't Reagan. In fact, it was more what happened in the 80s and how it affected my family. So my parents both immigrated to the U.S. from Europe. So they're immigrants, and I am the son of immigrants. And, well, it is what it is, you know. I have a perspective because of that, and I treasure it. My parents left. Their story came, their history of how they got to the U.S., they left communist Czechoslovakia in 1968. And they weren't able to return until I was 9 years old and living here in California, when I was for the first time able to come back to my parents' native country. Now think about this. You know, I grew up hearing about a country. It's far away. You know, it's great. It's all family lives there, but we can't go back because they have this thing called communism. Now, to a 9-year old, communism is, nobody understands that. It's this place where you're not really allowed to own anything and the government will take stuff away from you. And so this communism place did not sound good to me. And so the whole Eastern Bloc was crumbling in the fall of 1989. And my family ended up making a Christmas trip to Switzerland to visit some family. And while there, we made the decision, my dad and I, to return to his country because the Czech government, the Soviet regime had just collapsed and the borders for the first time had opened up. And here was this opportunity to go and revisit for my dad to revisit his country and for me to see my parents' country for the first time. And it was one of those things that shaped me, that just changed the way I think about life I'll tell you why. So I'm a kid from California. You know, I'm living a good life and I visit Switzerland, and Switzerland's a nice place. In fact, a very nice place. And now I get on a train and I go to this place. And I'll tell you right now, you would have thought it was like landing on a different planet, okay? For example, you go to the store, and this is something I picked up as a 10-year-old. You go to the store, you look at stuff on the shelves, there's nothing there to buy. You had stores with empty shelves. Lines for everything. You know, there's no newspapers, there's just one newspaper that, you know, is a state newspaper. And everybody there, I still remember this vividly, everybody there was so happy. And they kept saying, we're just free. We're free. We're free. And I didn't get it. I mean, I knew, you know, when you're a kid at school, you can get in trouble for saying things on the playground. Of course, I was the kid that would always get in trouble for saying things on the playground. But the concept of getting thrown in prison for it, I mean, that's something we didn't get. And so I could come back and I'd revisit the Czech Republic from time to time. And as I was growing up, I would then, you know, meet up with, you know, be at school and I'd have a teacher, for example, tell me, oh, communism, it's a great thing. It's an amazing thing. I'd scratch my head and I'd say, well, that's nonsense. Okay. Well, first of all, my parents taught me about a few things, but I would reflect back on my experiences, not just from that first visit, but gradually year after year of visiting. And this is really where my first kind of kernel of political consciousness came from. I became aware that of the fact that it's important. It's essential to give people private property rights, for example, to allow people to rise and to fall based on their own merit. I'll take those two things. You know something? One of my first summers there, this would have been probably 1991. So things are still pretty rough, right? The economy hasn't fully transitioned and every business is state owned, right? At 1989, think about that. Every business is state owned. So very few businesses were privatized in that period. I remember walking by a store and it was warm outside and there was a bunch of fruit in the display, you know, like pears and oranges and stuff like that. And there are wasps burrowing through the fruit in the display. Now, I grew up with like Stater Brothers and Albertsons and Ralph's. You know, this to me was like, I mean, this might have been like Africa somewhere. And it isn't. It's the heart of Europe. And I ask my dad, well, what the heck is this? He goes, well, son, that store doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to the government. The lady that works in that store, she doesn't own it. She doesn't have any vested interest in that store succeeding. And it clicked for me. I go, aha, I had that, you know, I almost had a little Milton Friedman moment before I even knew who Milton Friedman was, which is maybe that kernel of greed, right? That person who wants to create their own business and succeed and make a profit. Oh, what a horrible word, right? Profit. That same drive for profit makes that person tidy up their storefront, make sure that the best merchandise is available, make sure that their merchandise is better than, you know, that other store down the street, because they've got to compete. They've got to compete for dollars. And who benefits? And I realize that because I don't want to eat a piece of fruit with a wasp in it. Do you? I don't. And it struck me, you know, it struck my, at this point, I think my, you know, 10 to 11, 12-year-old brain, it started to hit. There, you've got to motivate people with something. And this system that, well, I had teachers in, yeah, Irvine Unified School District trying to tell me that communism was this great thing. And, you know, if it only had the right people behind it, it would surely succeed. So that was one thing, you know, I'm just trying to explain where my thinking comes from and where I got my political consciousness, because I want you to understand that and get my perspective on this. You know, and of course, you know, the concept of freedom, but private property, for example, it's the same thing. You'd walk through a city and you could tell the city was beautiful. The architecture was beautiful. Everything was gorgeous, but there were weeds. Everything was cracked. Buildings were crumbling. And why is that? Well, you can answer it, Mike. I'll ask you a question. Why do you keep up your house? Let's say you own that house, right? Why do you take care of it? Well, most of us that own their home, we have a vested interest in making sure that home is beautiful, kept up. First of all, we have pride of ownership, right? That's very important. But also, we have our life savings. Our it's an investment for us. We want to maintain our home values. We want, right? But in turn, you end up walking through a city, right? You'll walk through a town, and if everybody owns their own home, they're taking care of those homes individually. It's a very different thing when the state owns everything. And then, of course, there's the whole concept of the state being able to take things away from you. Confiscatory government, which is something, if you listen to this program, I rail against. Because a government that confiscates is a government that erodes confidence in the marketplace. Look no further than Venezuela. And there's some great news out of Venezuela. If I have time to get to it, I'll tell you. But basically, I mean, the country's falling apart, and it's confiscation. And I'll give you the best example I can. My mom always tells me the story about how my grandfather is coming home. He's coming home from work, and he looks up at their apartment, and he sees flowers. My grandmother put out these beautiful flowers in their flower box. And my grandfather tears into the house, throws the door open, and says, well, basically, what the hell are you doing? Why are you putting flowers in the flower box? You want some guy, some commie apparatchik, to come along down the street, and he will see those flowers, notice our nice apartment, and we'll get kicked out. Think about that. So, and I know, well, that's true. That's exactly the kind of arguments that you hear. Because, you know, liberals and socialists are always lurking for a system. They're always wanting to find that unicorn in the wild, the system that rewards virtues. And that's what they want. They want a system that rewards virtues. But where are all these angels? Well, it was always the posit that Milton Friedman put out there, the great economist and professor of economics, who always would say, you know, how do you pick the angels that decide? And I'll tell you, in a system like this, trust me, there was an elite. Trust me, there was an elite, because, you know, one of the things that you had, and I realized this too, I'd walk by a store. I remember this. I'd walk by a store and they had cool stuff in the display. And I go, whoa, what's that store? Oh, that's a store for the communists. They have special dollars. They have special money and coupons that they would use, and they could shop and they could buy Panasonic TVs and things like that. But for the rest of the people, get in line. You know, a waiting list for a car? 3 years. And it's not, I have to explain this to you because, you know, it's one thing to read economics and to read political theory in a book. And it's an entirely other thing to witness it, and especially to witness it at a young age. And so when I look, you know, when I look at Obama, and I listened yesterday on the program, I played that clip for you of Obama mocking Trump. What have you done for people? What have you done for people? What have you, you know, he wouldn't let you live in his condo. Do you remember that? He wouldn't let you live in his condo. He wouldn't let you on his, golf course. And my reaction to it is, what right do you have to be in his condo or on his golf course? I mean, he's not, and I, you know, I joked yesterday. I said, well, Trump only cares about the money. I mean, he doesn't care if you're black, blue, or whatever. He's gonna let you in if you pay. But deep down, liberals think you've got a right to other people's stuff. They think that they can reach their hands into your pocket and take anything in it by the virtue of you having a few more dollars than the next guy. And this is, by the way, if, you know, let me talk to you about LA, because LA is the best example of this. There are liberals everywhere. And actually, I found the bigger the house, the bigger the liberal. So you get these people in big houses. And I have a friend. And I love her to death, but, you know, lives in a beautiful home in LA. And we had this conversation. I said, well, what do you think, you know, how do we take care of the, you know, her big thing is taking care of the poor. And I said, well, how do you propose you do that? And it just comes out, well, I think that people who have money should give it up. I said, well, how many of your 7 bedrooms are you going to give up? Oh, no. I mean, we can't, but I mean, there are people that can. And I thought, Isn't that the absurdity of it? It's always, what am I going to do for him with someone else's money? And that's why, as Margaret Thatcher said, socialism fails when you run out of other people's money. Look no further than Venezuela. All right. When we come back, we are going to go. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Colin Powell and this Hillary thing, because we broke that story yesterday. We brought it to you at 7 p.m. and it's happening. So we'll get into it. All right. I'll tell you what I think of Colin Powell and why. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. When you're on a
holiday. Check out samnation.com for show podcasts. Email samnation at info@thesamnation.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and like us on Facebook.
Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, and let's get right into Hillary and Colin Powell. Now, Hillary has been talking Colin Powell for over a year, okay, because of course her fault, but while she's been talking, this email scandal is not new. It's been out there for about two years. And somewhere along the way, the Clinton folk, the team, including Cheryl Mills, who's knee deep in all this, have decided that they were going to come up with a clever story. And the clever story is, they did it too. You know, I told you my problem with this is it's playground politics. I mean, you know, you don't get, wow, little Johnny, you're in deep trouble. You just threw food. You can't. Oh, but he did it first. It doesn't work. So, well, if you don't believe me, I just want to go back historically here. We're going to go back first, all the way back to March 2015. This is clip number one. Robbie, this is CNN, March 2015, and here is Hillary Clinton. Is it playing? All right. We're going to find that. We're going to get it. We'll figure it out. So, you got it? Okay, let's do it. Clip number one.
Secretary Powell and...
Well, all right. We are having technical difficulties. We'll figure it out. Long story short, that's the first thing that she's saying. She's saying, hey, Secretary Powell used it. He used the email. He had it. And this is all the way back in March 2015. All the way back in March 2015, she starts spreading this. Now, if you go to these emails, and now the emails are between the emails that everybody's talking about are Colin Powell's emails that he is sending back and forth to various people that he interacts with. Some of them, one of the guys he's interacting with is Jeffrey Leeds, who is a big-time, big-wig Democrat lawyer, investor. He's a Harvard law grad. And big-time Democrat guy. And he apparently he's been described as Colin Powell's business partner. So they're doing some kind of goodwill ventures together. But not long story short, these emails are between Colin Powell and a variety of influential people, including this Leeds guy, Condoleezza Rice, and other people who are either present members or former members of government. And these emails they basically show the level of frustration that Powell has with being used as Hillary's scapegoat. So wait, we've got the clip. All right, so clip number one.
Secretary Powell and close aides to former Secretary Rice used private email accounts. And now you have these people in the government who are doing the same thing to Secretary Powell and Secretary Rice's aides they've been doing to me, which is that I never sent or received any classified material.
Oh, that's right. which of course is a complete and total freaking lie, right? We know that because that was all the way back in March 2015 when, you know, that was like a little while before Comey and the FBI finished and wrapped up their investigation, probably even before it started. So now let's play. Do we have clip number two? And this is exactly a year later, March 2016, at the Univision debate with Senor Jorge Ramos. And roll the tape.
Secretary Powell and close aides to former Secretary Rice.
There it is.
Used private email accounts.
Yes, yes, yes.
And now you have these people in the government who are doing the same thing. Oh,
that's the same one. All right, we are today at Struggle City here at the studio. All right, we're going to get it. All right, we're going to figure it out. So, in this one, she says the same thing. She's blaming it now. She's modulating a little bit her explanation of that she didn't, but she's still stuck in the same lie. She's still stuck in the same lie. And then so here's what Powell is saying about her. And this is what I have said from the very beginning, which is dumb. She should have done a full Monty at the beginning. Instead of using Powell as a scapegoat, should have just fessed up to it and dealt with it. So when we come back, we're going to fix these clips and we're going to play a few more of them and explain to you exactly why they matter and how it all ties into everything. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
We're back, and this is Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yes, indeed. So, Wobbles. Wobbles just can't, she cannot give this up. This email thing is haunting her. It's following her around like the dark horseman of the apocalypse. No, that's not, I'm not making a comment about Colin Powell. Colin Powell, it's all these emails are coming out. They're drip, drip, dripping out. And by the way, now I think we've got our technical problems fixed. I was getting worried that we'd outsourced our IT to Hillary Clinton's email team. The mysterious case of disappearing clips. Let's play that. Let's get back to that Univision debate. Now, this is Jorge Ramos. And again, she's scapegoating Colin Powell. Play the tape.
Secretary Powell has admitted he did exactly the same thing. He had such a distinguished record. You know, I have served my country as well. We both did the same thing.
Oh, what a weak sauce thing that is to say. Let's just recognize it for that, too. I mean, oh, what a distinguished record he had, and he did the same thing. Okay. Weak. Terrible. Now on Fox, Brett Baer. This is the same month, 2016, March 2016. Play that one.
Recently, Colin Powell's emails were retroactively classified from more than 10 years ago.
Right.
As he said, that was an absurdity. I could not agree more.
Okay. So here again, same thing. So just we want to hold Wobble's feet to the fire. And get her to make it clear that this is what she's been saying consistently. Now, we'll figure out our technical issues here in a minute. But so this is exactly now from the email that was sent from Colin Powell. We got spent last week with Cheryl Mills. Now, who is he emailing here? I don't know. Some Maribel character. He's saying spent last week with Cheryl Mills and the HRC team bearing the email flap. Well, let's think about that for a minute, too. So he is actually cooperating with Cheryl Mills, who is patient zero in this entire mess. Right. I mean, she's the attorney who who also served as an aide, who also served as a coordinator, who also served as the IT coordinator setup person. I mean, she's the one who is, while completely involved in setting up the server and setting up the email and coordinating Hillary's schedule and being the go-between between Hillary and the foundation, also happens to be an attorney. So, oh, I'm protected by attorney-client privilege. I can't testify. I can't get involved. That's Cheryl Mills. And now you can see that she is the one who's talking back channel with Colin Powell. And Colin Powell, what the heck? He's coordinating with them and trying to figure out how to make this go away. And so my take on it, yeah, so the next line is great. Madeline, meaning Madeleine Albright, another former Secretary of State, also says she doesn't remember the dinner conversation or launching such a conversation. So, again, one of the other people that they try to pull into this saying, hey, but, you know, I had a talk about Colin Powell where Colin Powell said, this is Hillary, right? Colin Powell said, this is okay. This is how you do it. It's perfectly acceptable. And by the way, Madeleine Albright was there, who everybody loves. And here's Colin Powell saying, no, that didn't happen. Now, what is, it's just from bad to worse, out of the frying pan into the fire. It goes from being just a bad decision on how to use email, and it turns into this total indictment of her fundamental character. It's a lie on top of a lie on top of another lie. And no matter how you, at this point, you just can't gild the turd anymore. It's a stinking turd. And I don't care how many layers of gold leaf you put on it, Hillary. You can't wobble your way out of it. So basically what happens is Colin Powell gets out and says, he doesn't comment on this. People say, hey, are these emails true? He says, I'm not going to add anything to it. And he's letting her hang. So this is what happens. This is what happens when your alibi bites you in the rear. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the media and how they're responding to all of this and what it says about it, and also Hillary's own basket of deplorables. This is good stuff. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
In 3, 2, 1. Coming up on The Next Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, we'll give you all the latest on the possible hacking of the RNC.
I'm just waiting for the KABC hacking scandal to go down. You know that it's going to be rich with expletives, and that's just Dr. Drew.
What?
And the naked pictures. Oh,
wow, that's Peter Tilden. Pictures.
How dare you? Live and local, right after Dr. Drew and Psycho Mike, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Oh, gosh. Well, I hope we don't get hacked. They can hack Dr. Drew. Jillian. Well, if they hack Jillian, you know, I hope they send a few of those emails our way. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. All right. What does the media have to say about all of this, and why does it matter? Well, the media, by the way, the media, in almost every bit of news talking about Colin Powell and all the tidbits about Hillary, because in those emails, too, he shows a lot of scorn for Hillary and reveals how much disdain Hillary has for Obama, which I think is fantastic, given the love that Obama was showing Hillary just yesterday on the campaign trail. Well, yeah, so, but what does now, how does the media look at this? Well, in most of the news stories I read, most of the headlines, and you've observed this too, I'm sure. You know, the media actually reports it as basically Powell hates Trump, and also Hillary. No, really, that's how it is. It's like that's what's front and center, because you know, in the comments of, well, in some of these emails back and forth, what does he say about Trump? He says he's a national embarrassment. Says some other stuff. Says a lot of stuff that's wrong, incidentally. I mean, people haven't really focused on this. A lot of his predictions, Colin Powell's predictions back in August of last year were dead wrong. There's no way he's going to make it. He's not going to have enough support. I mean, he might anger enough Republicans and tap into that vein of you know, undercurrent of the bad part of the party. But, you know, I mean, there were people, by the way, there were people back in August who predicted that Trump was going to make it all the way. Well, maybe somebody here. Perhaps. So Colin Powell is part of it is just wrong. And the other part of it that I think the media is not really picking up on is that he's just deep establishment. He's just he's this guy who's going around all the Hamptons parties, and he's going here and going there into this embassy and that embassy and da-da-da, and sipping champagne and eating fancy hors d'oeuvres. And that sailing ship full of hors d'oeuvre eating politicians hoity-toitying it up is exactly what Americans have had enough of. Because if you know what, if you're a middle class person and you can't feed your family and you've seen your income stagnate or drop year after year after year after year, you know what? Yeah, we're going to give a guy like Trump a chance. And I don't care how many George Wills, how many Colin Powells, how many George Bush, you know, Jeb Bush guacamole guy are going to be out there saying, oh, this guy's terrible. Oh, don't listen to him. Oh, he's culturally the worst thing coming. You know, I'll tell you, Hillary's basket of deplorables comment, I bet you, and this is the sad thing about it. This is where the Republican Party needs a major revamp. Because quietly, there's so many Republicans out there, establishment Republicans, people like Kasich, people like, a lot of people that ran for president. There are people who really in the Republican Party agreed with Hillary. They agreed with Hillary. Their elitism, and that's it. This is what has really been the underpinnings of this whole race, this fight against the elites, because people are tired of being told what to do. It's the foundation of revolution, and there's been a bit of a revolt. And I think I think the Republican Party was due for a shakeup. The reason the Republican Party lost election after election was because it was a party of Colin Powell. It was a party of people like Colin Powell who were more concerned about being liked by fellow Democrats and fellow inside the Beltway politicians than standing up for the interests of the American people. And so, like him or hate him, you might think he's a big buffoon and a vulgarian, but Trump got up there, and he got up there early, and he spoke up and he said things that resonated with Americans because someone was speaking their language and not just echoes of the Beltway. So where does all this go? Telling you, what's the polls now? Where are we at? I mean, the polls are just in one day, just since yesterday's show, Trump went up by 1%. It's crazy. And Hillary dropped by one. He's eroding her support. More when we come back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Check out samnation.com for show podcasts. Email samnation at info@thesamnation.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and like us on Facebook.
A heartwarming story straight out of College Park, Maryland, where a school bus driver was declared a hero by local parents. Now, what happened? Her bus caught on fire with 20 kids inside. And what did this lady do? Well, she's got two kids of her own, and apparently she went headfirst right into the fire and pulled each child out into safety. Now, this bus driver, identified by a parent as Renata Smith, just remained calm through the whole ordeal. And saved a whole lot of lives. So we here at Sam Nation, we salute Ms. Smith and thank her for her service to the community. I'll tell you. It's terrifying. Can you imagine being in that situation? And I'll tell you, you know, these are the kind of things. I was just talking to Sweet James the other day about these types. You know, you get into an accident, you got people trapped, and you've got to get them out. It's a harrowing experience. And then people come to him and say, you know what? Honestly, James, the worst part of it was when I had to deal with the insurance company. You know, I thought surviving the accident was bad enough. And then I had to call the insurance company. I got the runaround. It's almost like I was getting hurt twice. So here's what you need to do. Don't let the insurance company take advantage of you. Don't let them roll. Just call Sweet James. He's the attorney we trust. He's the attorney that we use. This is it. All you have to do, call 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And hours already flying by. And I tell you, let me talk to you quickly here about Trump and about this whole issue. Now the press is making this whole thing with his health out to be the battle between the health, you know, the health records, as if somehow Trump is the one who's wobbling and falling down in the middle of the street. And they're making a big to do about his weight. There's some, you know, discrepancy, whether it's closer to 235 or 275. And I'm just, here's my take on this. Leave it alone. Couple of things. One, everyone loves a fat guy. Okay. Now, nobody, you know, now I'm not saying a fat guy, but Trump's he looks good, but he's, you know, don't do it. And since when are the Democrats into body shaming? I mean, come on. I thought, you know, where's Lena Dunham when you need her? You know, this is crazy. So don't go there. It's just, don't go there. It's not good. But the second thing is, there's something tremendously lovable about a rich dude that eats fast food. Hear me out. Okay, so, you know the crazy thing about this? The optics. People are always talking about optics in races. You know, yeah, Mitt Romney. He's a guy who had hundreds of millions of dollars, has a lot of money, and he flies coach. But what was it? Everybody looked at him and said, ah, there's an elitist. There's a guy, that guy. I mean, they were basically picturing him flying around on some private jet, you know, eating a Snickers bar with a knife and fork. I mean, that's what people had in their minds of Romney, and he couldn't get rid of that. He couldn't get rid of that imagery, no matter how hard he tried. Conversely, Trump is a guy who's unabashedly rich. His apartment is covered in gold and marble. It's opulent. And then he's sitting there on his jet eating KFC. And everybody's going, I love it. This is great. This is terrific. Because you know what? It's authentic. Because, you know, everybody could picture themselves on a private jet eating a Big Mac. That people could, that's exactly, what do you think lottery winners do? That's exactly what a lottery winner does. And so I'm telling you, this is a no-go. Because somehow, some way, I'm trying to explain it to you, that Trump is more authentic eating his KFC on his jet than a rich dude like Romney flying around on JetBlue, you know, playing the I'm normal card. Oh, I wish people would listen to me. Anyway, maybe you do. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, 7 p.m. Visit us on samnation.com for all the stuff, Twitter, Instagram, etc., etc. We will see you back here tomorrow night. Be well. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.